6 foot point of distance and the damage that's been done. The government, the gun that shoots to save us. And I don't need the pills and vaccinations. I got all the air to breathe. The sunshine on my face is just like medicine to me. Why do we compete with Mother Nature? Well, war is hell, a weapon of taxation. It's been poison in the well. I wonder how they made it so that we could hardly tell the difference between slavery and salvation. All through the turning, all through the turning of time. Let's call it what it is. It's organized crime. All through the turning, all through the turning of time. Let's call it what it is. It's organized crime. For it's easier to trick somebody than it is to convince them that they've been tricked. So pick your tribe, but your choice is an illusion. It's just two sides of the toss, the red one and the blue one. Yeah, they'll televise the fight and demonetize the revolution. Well, history is written by the victors. It's the killing of the king, the sacrificial victim, and the club that you're not in. The power that's corrupted absolutely. All through the turning, all through the turning of time. Let's call it what it is. It's organized crime. There's only three things that no one can hide.
Thank you very much, everybody.
Hello, folks. Welcome to the End Evil podcast. This is Chris Jansen, and evil is the destruction of freedom. If you haven't yet checked out the book, The End of All Evil, I've got it for sale on endevil.life, along with my new book, The Book That Changed My Life. And that is now available. I can send you a signed copy if you click the link on the store tab. And I also just recently added a PDF for a $5 donation if you want to do that. So with no more ado, this is a really exciting interview I got coming up for you folks today. I'm not in my normal studio. I got a little remodel project going on, but I got my man, Brendan Daniel here, who's an amazing musician that I had the pleasure of meeting at the Sound Path to Freedom event. And man, your voice just blows me away, Brendan. And it was so great to meet you. And I want to say before I let you start talking that ever since the event, I downloaded all your songs and I've been playing them as I drive around or as I'm working. And I just know this whole period of my life is going to be like every time I hear your music, it's going to bring back these memories. And that is so precious. And one of the things I really love about music. But thanks for joining us, Brendan. Say hi.
Yeah, man. No, that's great to hear. I'm happy to be here, dude. I appreciate the invite. And that makes me feel really cool to hear. Meeting all you guys was awesome. And everybody that's been reaching out and saying that, it's just like, it's incredible. So I'm stoked, man. It's really great to hear.
Yeah.
And like I read the intro to your book. Haven't gotten deep into it yet, but I read Will Keller's introduction there. It's great. I know I'm going to love it.
Yeah, Will and I have done a couple episodes talking about Renaissance, and that's really what I hope to help encourage and motivate and inspire. Renaissance, you know, you get the idea of art and music, and I've always thought, like, what could be more valuable than art? You know, someone can just paint something or make some music, and it costs nothing, basically, the canvas to do it on or the, you know, space to record on the machine. And it could be worth any amount of, you know, value in the future. In fact, I've heard that like some big time gangsters in the world trade art because it's the easiest way to trade large, large amounts of value, you know? So imagine how much we could change the world with a renaissance of these ideas of morality and using this art is a way to do it. So maybe you could start by just telling us a little bit about your process of becoming a musician and what got you inspired to start playing the guitar and singing.
Yeah, sure. I guess music was always kind of a part of my life. I grew up in your mainstream kind of Protestant Christian house. So my dad was the worship leader, and you know, there was always music at church. We were kind of not allowed, but like heavily discouraged from listening to like secular music, quote unquote secular music. So most of my, you know, music growing up was like church hymnals and like, you know, what I call Jesus music. And so that was probably my introduction to it. But then as I got a little older into my adolescence, I really found a liking to the harmonica. It was one of my dad's friends, Mike Butler, who I think started playing like some bluesy stuff on the harmonica when I was a kid, probably like 5 or 6 or something like that. And I don't know why, or, you know, who knows, like maybe some past life shit or something. I don't know. But I was just immediately drawn to that instrument. I found it so cool and convenient, you know, you could just take it anywhere. And then like through high school and stuff, I always had like one, and I would like beatbox into it and, you know, come up with some like clever stuff. I considered myself more of a drummer. I think everybody's born a drummer, and then you just kind of get that, you know, I don't know, beaten out of you through society or whatever. So I played the djembe and stuff like that. And I would like beatbox into the harmonica and started traveling around and camping, and then like, you know, parted ways from the deconstruction of that institutionalized belief system, so to speak. And And then kind of then my brothers, my two older brothers, I have two older brothers and an older sister, I'm the youngest. They started getting together and doing church at their own house, because there's likewise we're starting to kind of realize the hierarchy of the church institution of it all, and we're just doing more of like breakfasts and like kind of like talking about like, what do you think this means and what do you think that means. And so my brothers came up with the idea for like, I think they looked at, and I could be getting this wrong, but I think, or they could be getting it wrong, I haven't looked into it yet, but the etymology of the what the word church was supposed to mean was something more like a town meeting. So they came up with the idea of town meeting, which kind of organically became a band with the two of them playing like open mics and stuff. And then I would go to those open mics and occasionally play with them. And then just, you know, over time, it just became that I became one of the members of the band, and it was the three of us. And yeah, turns out you need one more than one harmonica, which is very unfortunate because they're like $50 a piece. You got to get like two for every key. So yeah, just kind of naturally started taking music a little more seriously. I'm left-handed, so it's always been a little bit of a struggle to play, to find like a left-handed guitar. They're not as available as right-handed guitars, but my oldest brother is also left-handed and plays left-handed guitar. So then that happened, and cut me off anytime if I'm just rambling. But
no, so then you're that good. Happened.
And then the whole plandemic and everything, and I've told the story 1,000 times, but you know, my older brothers, God bless them, weren't privy to things that I was paying attention to at that time, which is to say that they got the, you know, the Jabberooski, and I avoided it and wasn't allowed to play anywhere. Like all music was monopolized at that point, so nobody was allowed to play anywhere if you didn't want to subscribe or be subservient to the will of the you know, that bullshit, you know what I'm talking about. So then that kind of sparked my solo career, and I started writing a lot more solo stuff, trying to make a much more in the direction of truth and liberty and freedom, as a reaction of everything that happened during the COVID stuff. And it's been an incredible silver lining, because I've met people like you and all the incredible people that I've met, like, you know, Soundpath and Porcupine Freedom Fest, and just like everybody in the Free State community, and everybody like just in general, like, you know, meeting Mark and Richard and like all these incredible people whose voices really helped me through a lot of this stuff.
Right.
Now I'm in another band, you know, with two incredible songwriters. We're called Red Pill Friends.
Oh, cool.
And yeah, it's just been really cool. So it's just like, I guess the overall of it is that music's kind of just always been a part of my life. It's always just been this thing
woven
that's
in,
helping me through. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, when I interviewed Grant Presence last week, I was telling him, I remember during the scam, he put out that track, and I think I don't know if it was that track, but one of his tracks on the video, he was wearing this shirt.
Oh yeah.
And I was like, oh my gosh, there it is. And it's someone, you know, like publicly showing it. And I was so excited about that. And like you said, hearing people over the years leading up to that, like Richard Grove, like Mark, obviously, and we talked about that too, helped prepare me so that when that happened, I was kind of like, I know what's going on. This is a scam. You know, I was onto it from the very first bit, you know. But you know what else reverberated with me is you coming from the church and Christian background. My dad was a preacher. He actually went to seminary when I was a kid and got his whatever you call it, degree in ministry, so he could preach at churches. So I spent my whole childhood at churches, and I even joined a volunteer service with a particular Christian. And it was actually, I had a lot of great experiences through that, but yeah, there's definitely this point in my life where I made this separation. And for me, it was like seeing some of the duplicity of it and seeing some of the, like, I kept thinking about like the Crusades in history. Like, how many people have died in the name of these structured religions, you know? And I came across several books that really kind of opened my mind. Thomas Paine was a writer that he really cracked open my mind in a way. I was like, yeah, those are some good points you're making, bro. So I'm kind of curious, what were there any particular influences that sort of cracked that open? And then also, did that cause any division with you and your parents and such and the rest of your family?
Well, Rob Bell, I think, I don't know if you've ever heard of him. He was one of the first authors who was like very much involved in, he was like a preacher or pastor or whatever, and had like, was kind of very well known amongst that space. And then he started kind of speaking out about hell and getting into, once again, the etymology of words and like dissecting like Hebrew meanings of like what this and like, you know, going through scripture and like what the time would have been like. And I don't really know much about what he's into now, but I know that at that point, it was that sense of like, oh yeah, this is all fear-based. This is this whole hell thing. Like, you've got to either make the right choice based on, you know, as Mark talks about the real seven deadly sins, right? Like, we, you know, they're not, none of them are based in actionable stuff. It's all mostly just like how, you know, thoughts and really trying to control people's behavior. So realizing that a lot of the things that were being taught in, you know, this institutionalized belief system were predicated on fear. And that was the main objective, was to recruit people into the next life, you know, heaven, so that they could avoid the next life of hell, which would go on for eternity. And there'd be weeping and gnashing of teeth and all these horrible things that, you know, as a kid, when you're told that, like, it scares the ever-loving shit out of you. You know, like, I mean, I just remember being terrified of this idea of hell. And then kind of deconstructing that, I think all of my brothers and I were kind of doing that at the same time. It didn't necessarily cause much of a gap, from what I remember, between like my parents and I, because I think that they were just happy that we were kind of trying to find it on our own. Like, my oldest brother, Luke, was a youth pastor at that time. And I remember he would put on some pretty like kick-ass things. He would do like, you know, like your, I don't know, like these like skits and stuff, and like try to make, and he was like, Philip Yancey, I think, is another author. He wrote a book called What's So Amazing About Grace. And it was just more touching on the spiritual side of like love and like what the character of Jesus would have, you know, morally been about, like in terms of like rejecting the Pharisees and, you know, much more about like the kingdom of heaven being within, and like all of these things that, as you and I both know, and everybody in the natural law space who has looked into these things, the Renaissance, as you mentioned, it's like that's much more aligned with what I think is going on in those texts. And the church I grew up in would have been more of what you'd consider to be, you know, I suppose, the philosophies of the Pharisees. And but my dad is still very much involved in church, but he's what you'd call a good Christian. You know, he's not really concerned about what other people do, and he's not really a very judgmental guy. He goes and does like food pantry and just like, you know, feeds people who don't have food and tries to just help people out. And my mom's a total other direction. She's I don't know where she is with faith anymore, but politics has come in there pretty hardcore. So
faith, now that's an interesting topic in itself. But I was just going to reflect on, you know, I actually feel like Christians that I've known in the past and still currently, in a lot of ways, there's still more parallels. It's almost easier to bridge the gap of conversation talking about morality, because they generally are people that care about morality and see that as a priority. So the only separation is, you know, when we start talking about, you know, some of the nuances of what's right and what's wrong without the Bible. And so many people I've talked to, everything goes back to the Bible. And I'm like, wait a second, you know, what if someone never had the opportunity to get that book? Or what about before that book was even printed, you know? So there wasn't morality then, you know, and all these kind of deeper questions pop up. But I do feel like that is one of those gaps that's a little easier to bridge with people that are already caring and interested in morality and see that as a priority. And I can have pretty good conversations with people for the most part in that realm, although there's a more extreme dogmatic versions of Christian has quite a range.
Yeah, the denominations, right? Like,
Right.
I wrote a song called Tarot Jesus. I played it at Soundpath. And Tarot Jesus is very much based on a lot of these things.
I found Jesus at the bottom of the rabbit hole again. He was shuffling a tarot deck and smoking marijuana cigarettes. I put the pedal to the metal on a Monday afternoon, and I wasn't going anywhere I wanted. I just had to be there soon. You got a Bobby, do you love me? Did you leave me all alone? Well, the world seems so ugly when you're stuck inside the cell of your cell phone. So get off it. Everything is an offer. It's a telescope that all along it's microscopic.
Institutionalized religion that you're discouraged from looking at, like, you know, astrology, astrotheology, in a lot of ways, like the etymology of words, like real history, tarot, the Kabbalah, like, you know, anything that's considered the occult.
Yeah.
It's the big bad occult.
Right.
So the first line is, I found Jesus at the bottom of the rabbit hole again. And he was shuffling a tarot deck and smoking marijuana cigarettes. Because I more often than not would just find that sense of, right, like, you know, your Christ within or your higher self, however you want to put it, right? When I would be getting high or through a lot of psychedelic experiences, you know, like within your own spirit, that was like the big thing that kind of even deterred. My brothers can't smoke. They get like paranoid. They like lose their minds. But I love it. I smoke all the time, and I feel
I feel like
a deep sense of connection with what you would want to, with what I would consider to be Christ. Like more often than not, when I'm in that state of mind, and I'm, you know, I have a little bit of plant medicine or cannabis, and I'm just connected with nature, and just feeling aligned with the spirit. So
I think that kind of ties in. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say through a lot of that, it led to like, psychedelic journeys and like astrotheology and, all this kind of crazy stuff that to me, I always wanted to like talk to Christians about, because it's like fascinating stuff that I was like, this is like creation isn't, like it's all kind of a part of creation, the one. And but yeah, if you're kind of limiting yourself to a certain type of belief and it's based in fear, then more often than not, people aren't willing to step outside of those parameters and engage in these things, which are so beautiful. So
Right, like
anyway.
that's exactly what I was going to comment on, like the whole questioning process, like when we're born, from the time we're growing, it's like a constant asking all these questions, and infants are like, why? When little kids are like, why, dad? Why, mom? Why? Why?
Yeah.
Why? Why? And at some point, this grinder of society starts trying to tell you that if you want to grow up, you got to stop asking those questions. And whether it's religion or school, they're saying, no, now just accept these answers. Quit asking too many questions. And I feel like things like cannabis, or for me, mushrooms, have really opened up even more questions than I would have even dreamed of. And that's always been a beautiful, wonderful thing. That being said, I'm on Sober September right now, which is for me kind of tough with the herb. I've always, my whole life, cannabis has worked really well for my personality and who I am. But I'm also really appreciating some time off right now. It's pretty exciting. And also it'll be fun when I'm done with this month to smoke
Yeah.
again. But
It's actually, yeah,
go
I was
ahead.
gonna say it's been about over a week and a half now, the longest I've gone in a long time without smoking because of my tooth surgery.
Oh,
So
right.
I've done like the tinctures and like, like little CBD like
Yeah.
pills or whatever, but like it doesn't really affect me in the same way as like smoking. So
Right.
but it is incredible like noticing
You
how
having
much
weird
differently my
dreams?
mind works. And yeah, super weird dreams.
Fine.
I had like a dude, I don't know, it's weird to talk about this live on air, but I don't care. I had like a crippling anxiety attack like a couple of nights ago. It's actually the day it was the day before Charlie got shot, or whatever that was, which maybe there's some Schumann resonance there for me, because like all of a sudden it's like a high impact event, right? Like everybody's attention is on
Focus.
one thing, and so maybe that had something to do with it, or maybe there's probably a lot of things, but like I think it's got a little bit to do with just like I was just more tuned in with my mind, but like my mind kind of like attacked me. Like I had like a sense of like I felt like I was on like 10 strips of LSD all of a sudden, and I was like shivering cold, and like I was looking at my girlfriend. I'm like, "Are you cold?" She's like, "No, I'm fine." I'm like shivering cold. Like I was like ice cold to the
Whoa.
touch,
Yeah.
and I just like was like dead sure that I was like gonna die, and like kind of like had to like kind of chill out. And like, get into my breathing and like put my body in like certain positions, like, like yogic positions, and just like try and chill out. But it was just strange. And just observing that and being like, man, like, would that be happening more often if I wasn't smoking all the time?
Well, that's
shit.
interesting, is that the fear thing, that's one thing I've tripped out on. I've known quite a few people in my life that have like never done anything like that, like never done cannabis, never tried mushrooms, never done acid. And I think to myself, like, is that they're just that pure in their self-discipline, or sometimes it almost seems more like there's this fear of
Oh
where's it going
yeah.
to take me? Maybe that extreme fear of winding up in one of those positions like you're describing, where you're in the fetal position and your heart's racing and you're like, am I dying? But there's something to be said for being brave enough to go there. In fact, not just something, there's a lot to be said. You think about any native tribe, you think about people that go do peyote or go to South America to take the one of those tea ceremonies or whatever, like you're like risking your mental, you're putting yourself in a very scary place. And when you allow yourself to do that, that's when you climb the mountain. You go through that tough journey of the soul and you come through, and then you're more powerful because you're like, I've been there, man. I thought I was gonna die. I was hanging on the edge of the cliff in my mind, but I freaking pushed through. And I think that makes us a stronger and tougher from facing fear and learning that we can get through it,
Yeah, that's beautiful. Yeah,
Yeah.
that's you nailed it. I mean, like when you go through something like hard with somebody, you have that natural kind of like bonding experience. And in a way, that's like what we ought to be kind of like all experiencing as a human family. Like we're here living, like we don't know what the fuck this really is to some degree. You know, like incarnation is like a is a bit of a dive into the unknown. You know, there are things that are known, there is truth, but like this journey is we're all on it together, you know, and in a way, I think acknowledging that is it connects us on a soul level where it's just like you said, that psychedelic journey. People really are, they don't, you know, when you stare into the abyss, it stares right back. So
Yeah, the
as they
void
say.
stares back, my man,
Yeah.
Library of the Untold. I love the name of his band.
But it's freeing. It is an incredible, it's terrifying, but it's freeing. You have to kind of go through that, the Negroni, right? The blackening, and go through the dark parts of you know that the alchemical process to truly bring that out. I mean, that's what music really is for me, is you know putting forth all that packaging, programming, and things that trauma, you know, and bringing what creates the sense of freedom, you know, out of that. You know, liberating myself and hopefully anybody who hears those rhythms and musics like through it.
And it's so relatable to other people. It opens up a door between people that's like a universal bond. And it got me thinking. I remember seeing this interview. I wish I could remember the name of the gal, but famous musician. And they were asking her like, where does she get her inspiration from to write the lyrics and the songs she writes? And she's like, it just comes to me like from the ether. Like I didn't write this. This stuff came through me. And I remember like the Beastie Boys, one of those guys was quoted saying that too. Like, that's why they made up that song Intergalactic, because they were like, this stuff comes from outer space, bro. It doesn't come from me. You know, I'm just channeling it. So tell us a little bit about your experience with that and how, and I'm curious how your process works of writing music too, and how you create the wonderful things you do.
Well, thank you very much for saying that. I think it's I think that's it in a lot of ways. Like to bring it back to scripture, you know, it's like the word, right, is like what speaks existence. And like word is sound. And I think that in a lot of ways, as human beings, we this gets back to Passio's pillars of self-realization, where we are stuck in our five sense reality, where we think that we're our five senses, when in reality, like we can only pick up so much on the visual spectrum. You know, and like science proves that, and like we're real only in touch with so much of what's going on here. So in a way, we're kind of like an antenna, and those thoughts that we align ourselves with, which are those thoughts that I think in a way. So when I write a song, I guess to touch on my process, it's very often something will just kind of like come to me, like a lightning bolt, a phrase. Sometimes it's maybe a song, it's a full song, but sometimes more often than not, it's just like one phrase or something being said in a certain way or in a different way, where I think to myself, like, if I can find a way to say that, that will be relatable to like that's the way I'm trying to, that's it, you know. So I'll write it down, and then it'll work its way into something organically. If I you know, I've got to put myself down with it and do the work of bringing that forth. But a lot of that is just kind of aligning myself with that space where it can come through most clearly. So for instance, my song I wrote is called Needle on the Outskirts. I probably wrote that song maybe a month or like a couple weeks or a few weeks after I had this thought in my head of just, you know, the phrase "to each their own." everybody's heard that phrase and everybody knows that phrase, right? To each their own. That's like, it's a very simple, broad stroke, but it connects with a lot of people. And that's what I'm trying to do when I write a song, I'm trying to connect with a broad audience, like everybody, not just like a specific, like on the nose topic, if I can. So, and obviously in this realm, we know much about self-ownership and how important self-ownership is. It's almost like the key of like what the whole thing is about. Self-ownership, sovereignty above reins. Like, what a better way to put this gigantic umbrella of concepts into one small phrase than matching that phrase that already exists, to each their own, with self-ownership. So, to each their own, to own themselves. And I just like, that's it. So I write it down, and you know, and I know that that's eventually going to be put into a song there. So I just give it time and try to align with it. And then when the time is right, lightning strikes and it just comes.
Like planting the seed, right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, you made me think too. Natalie Rise has a song about autonomy, and then, you know, Richard Grove with autonomy. That word, like sovereignty, also kind of encapsulates that same concept. But then there's this other aspect of reality where we're like woven in and glued to all the other life around us, and we affect everything else. And I think that's like a huge step of the spiritual evolution that maybe just a lot of the public and mainstream just is blocked for whatever reason from getting there, is recognizing that not only am I here to discover the truth and see the void staring back at me, but then I'm supposed to do something with that,
right,
and share it with other people. And I think music kind of naturally does that. But I'm curious if you had some point in your journey where you kind of realized, like, wait a second, it's not just for my own process, but this is for the world, for the future of humanity, for all life, you know?
Yeah.
How does that strike you?
Yeah, well, I'll share a story, and I'll try not to cry when I share it, because I share it often.
No, feel free, man.
It gets me very emotional. But my buddy, I won't share his name, but my buddy, he grew up with me. He grew up a much tougher situation than I had with a family. Like, my parents are still together. They love each other. Everything's great. Him, not so much. He grew up in a very rough upbringing. Stepdad's in and out. Certain stepdad, not so good. Very abusive. And he's had a long go with it. And we've always been friends and we've been close. And so I, a little while ago, I hiked the long trail. It's probably back in like 2017 or something. I hiked the entire long trail, which is a hiking trail across the state of Vermont from Massachusetts all the way to Canada. It was awesome. I loved it. It was one of the best things I ever did. And when I got back, I had some inspiration, just, you know, spending that much time in nature. This was one of those ones that just came straight to me, full on. There's a song called Least of These, and I just wrote, it was just like one of those magic moments. I just had to get out the jar to catch the lightning. And and to me, but it was very heavily inspired by hiking this trail. So I play the song, and we record the song with town meeting. And then one time I'm at a party, and my buddy Kyle comes up to me, and he's like, I want you to know that, he's like, can I talk to you? And we went over and we were talking. He's like, a little while ago, I was driving in my truck because I found out my stepdad was beating on my mom again. And I was like, you know, I was enraged with violence to the point where I was on my way over there to go kill him. Like, I was going to kill him. And if you knew him, you know, just as well as I do, he's not kidding. He was going to do it. And he said, I had the town meeting CD in the truck, you know, and I could hear your song, Least of These, come on. And I pulled over and I hit the back button to play it again, and I turned it up. And brother, I started bawling, because right then and there I knew that I was gonna forgive him. And I was like, damn, dude, that's a song that I kind of wrote about hiking, and it helped you deal with violence and anger and like making like a right choice over a wrong choice and like trying to like make a better decision. Like, that's beyond my power. Like, that was like a sure sign that like doing something, like as you said, and creating that had such an impact on my friend in a subcontinent, not even in a direct way that I could have been like, hey, you know, like it was like, you know, higher power, you
divine.
Know? Yes. Yeah.
And it's synchronicity.
Humbling. It's humbling. There's nothing about that that's like, oh, how great am I? It's like, oh, how great is it that that it's working all the time, you know, and that I can be in service to this thing. And I think that's, to touch back on the religious thing, I think that's one of my biggest qualms that I find with a lot of the mainstream institutionalized religion is this idea that it's all about the next world. And that you only have to focus on the recruiting process of getting people to the next world rather than like doing anything here and now and actually taking action.
This is it. This is the point horizon. That's what I like to put it. You know, this moment is the only thing that exists.
Mm-hmm.
Future and the past aren't even really that real anymore, you know, or you know,
this is the holy moment. Yeah. All the time.
I feel like you got another song brewing there too, unless you've already got this about catching the lightning, or maybe catching the lightning in a jar. Is that already out there? Because man, that sounds like one in the making, if not.
Well, who knows? Maybe that's for you, Chris.
Maybe so. So, I mean, honestly, you guys really got me, the whole sound path thing got me going, and I'm back to working on music, which I actually spent quite a few years of my life making up songs. Never professionally, never really published them, but really spent a lot of time enjoying that process of writing lyrics and then putting them together with tracks. And me and my buddy would get together in some little closet and record them and then giggle, you know, and listen to them for the next few weeks. Like, dude, look what we made. It's so fun,
it's fucking
man.
Awesome.
And a lot of them turned out to be prophetic too. Like, I would have never realized. And then listen to them years later, I'm like, damn, that song's about everything that happened in my life over the next 10 years. I didn't plan that shit. That shit just happened. Yeah. Bro.
That is a whole other. So in that same song, to piggyback off that thought, that very same song, Least of These, I didn't know quite what I knew the spirit of what I was writing. I knew it was inspired by nature, but I didn't know quite how prophetic it was. And there's a line in it that says, you said to me, the worst disease is probably what'll hurt the least, so try and keep an eye out. And the song's called Least of These, and I didn't even like draw the comparison, because the first line is you said it's about like it's kind of loosely based on that scripture, like what you do for the least of these you do for me or whatever. I'm not well versed in scripture, so I don't know what scripture that is. But it's so like I didn't even realize I was drawing those two comparisons on least and least within the two verses. But just that realm, like how deep that, like the worst disease is what'll hurt the least. And here we are in 2025 in the realm of convenience and AI. And it's like, that's talking about convenience. I didn't know then. But I think that's, you know, kind of what I was talking about then. It was like, and I can remind myself of that sometimes when I think of my own lyrics of like, yeah, the worst disease is what'll hurt the least. Like, be cautious of comfort. And that touches on what we were saying earlier with the hero's journey and kind of going into the abyss, and you know, in a lot of ways you have to go through that uncomfortable process. And you know,
it was cool too, because I was talking with Presence last week about I did some work for Andrew Kaufman, who saying about terrain theory, and there is no, you know, such thing as disease necessarily. Their whole way of proving it isn't really even scientifically proven at all. And a lot of things Kaufman says and has said so reverberated with me. I felt that way my whole life about a lot of things. And, you know, what with the flu shots and stuff, I was always like, you know, everybody thinks that, but I don't think so. And then people saying, oh, you made me sick. I'm like, whatever, right. You know, I mean, people say that, but there's really like, it's so inconsistent. It doesn't seem at all like a science from my point of view, but you know, I'm just some dude, some homeboy from the street, you know, what do I know? But then hearing like somebody who really like succinctly put it into scientific terms and explain why, I was like, see, which kind of brings me to another thing. You struck a chord in me when you talked about faith. And I'm really curious how that, you know, like you made that similar transition I did from coming from the religious background to following your own autonomy and your own sovereignty and your own questioning process and trying some different plant medicines. How would you say your relationship with faith has changed through all that? What does that mean to you now? That's a hard question. You don't have to take it on, but I'm curious.
Yeah, no, that's a great, it's a hard question, but it's a great question. You know, I guess I wouldn't know necessarily how to answer it. I mean, I definitely still am mystified every day by just the world, the whole sphere of consciousness, whatever that is. And I think that's just it. I think that's really it, is just that this notion to always be curious and always be, you know, like never too comfortable, I suppose. I got this tattoo. It was one of the first tattoos I ever got. And I didn't know at the time it was the masculine and feminine symbols, essentially. It meant aesthetic voyager at the time, because it was just like, it was this movie Into the Wild, and like me and my buddies would go camping, and we all would always talk about like aesthetic voyager.
The candles, yeah.
But the idea that life is an adventure, like life in itself, like when you're on an adventure and you got your pack on your back, or you're like out on, you know, on the road or whatever, like you're always mystified by strangers, like whether their kindness or there's this sense of like anything can happen, that I think like we kind of put it away when we go back like home or like to our regular lives or jobs, and we go on autopilot. But in reality, like we're always kind of like on this adventure, you know? And so I think I try to kind of always remind myself of that. Like if I'm drifting off into autopilot and forgetting that like it's all kind of like a big, wonderful mystery to journey.
Yeah, like you can have faith that there's always going to be more questions. That's one thing you can definitely have faith that there's going to be more mystery. There's going to be more mystical things. There's going to be surprises. There's always another door. I've always thought about it like, you know, you open one door and inside that door, there's like 100 more doors, you know? It's like, you want to open another one?
Yeah.
That's what like life's like. Yeah. And I really, man, it hits with me what you're saying about nature too, because that's what, and what you were saying about the town meeting and church, because I remember when I started separating from, you know, like the dogma of the Christian structure, I was like, nature's my church. You know, people say, oh, you go to church? I'm like, no, I go to nature. Nature's my Bible, you know?
And even Jesus said that, right? You know, the Son of Man has no place to lay his head.
And talk about a rebel, you know, you were talking about the kingdom of heaven is within, right? Like I got into this podcast in my podcasting series. I got into doing this whole presentation about that because I'm starting to relook at these, you know, biblical stories with a different light. I still really like my study Bible and looking back at it. And like, that's pretty awesome. Like Jesus was a rebel. If you actually go read that, what it says is that like, he picked up a bunch of sticks and made a whip and chased these people out of the town center. Like that's not what you think of as being a kind, sweet, you know,
vipers, snakes. Yeah.
He chased them out, man, with a whip, you know, he's pretty tough, you know, a pretty tough rebel that wasn't messing around, you know? And, I think, you know, what it brings to my mind is that if you really go through that questioning process, it forces you to galvanize what you do think. What do I think? And how far are you going to go down that road till you actually know and you're not just thinking anymore? Mm. And I think that's a big part of that process of, like you were saying, transmutation or working through the alchemical process of becoming, you know, becoming better, becoming more solid in what you are.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's happening all the time. Like in that way of, like with my buddy.
Yeah, that story, man, you gave me the chills. So.
It gives me the chills. When I talk about it on stage, I'm always feel like an idiot.
Hey, but that's real. That, but, that's connects, what, you know, an emotion, like you were showing your tattoo. It makes me think too of, you know, like when Mark Passio shows that slide with intelligence, and you got the intel on one side and the gen over here, the creative process, and the I in the middle, it's like our balanced brains, right? Like, it's one thing to have logic and be able to work through these logical things, like what actually is a disease. And then it's another thing to have an intuition, be like, I always felt like there was something else, right? And when you put those two together, that's freaking powerful. And that's what these modern structures of authoritarian control don't want you to do, because it's freaking powerful when you do that, you know?
Yeah. Yes, yeah, it's just suppression of the imagination, like hard right. at work. Absolutely. Right. It's incredible. I had a thought earlier. Well, I guess I had a funny thought earlier where I guess what you're saying ultimately is that you're the son of a preacher man.
There's a song, hell yeah.
I guess the thought I had is that, yeah, you've got to do the work, and that's the important part. That's also the uncomfortable part, but that's the part that that is the journey, right. Is taking that step into action. And
doesn't yeah. Artistic expression help with that journey from your point of view?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, artistic expression is like how I feel like is my whole thing. In fact, it's like the more logical side of things that I'm trying to kind of brush up on and get a little better at, you know, getting like a microphone and like setting things up. And, you know, you don't need to be a master at, you know, I understand that my talent is the creative right brain side of things, but it involves a lot of the organization process of putting a lot of that work into action in that logical sense. That is, you know, the work part, but you know, you got to have that part in order to kind of to put stuff out there.
Right. Like each person's challenge is different, you know, and that's something I try to point out on the show too, like to encourage listeners, like, obviously we're not all going to be Brendan Daniel. Like your voice is just amazing. You know, like my voice is never going to be what your voice in terms of the timbre and the tone and the way you can belt it out. But that doesn't mean that my voice can't create some really awesome tunes, or my voice can't carry some really awesome messages that could affect people.
Or that it even has to be your actual
right.
voice.
Could be writing.
Your voice can be carried through, you know, by someone else who sings it. I mean, that was one of the things I look back at, like a lot of the artists who, what I call the old guard now, because they seem to have sold out after all the COVID nonsense, but just that they used to just kind of play each other's songs.
Right. Like meeting folk music, Miranda.
Yeah. Meeting Mike Miranda, who was in a band called The Mammals. He's my bandmate and Red Pill friends. I cover his song Unpopular Ideas every time I play now. And it's just a beautiful song that touches on like the philosophy of nature and self-governance and, you know, big pharma and like all of these incredible topics that he just beautifully put into a song. And, you know, we met by, you know, divine intervention, like being in the right place at the right time at Porkfest, like these things that that's the part you don't have kind of control over, that chaos.
Synchronicity. Part,
but that will to be like, let's get together, let's practice, let's make a band, let's... You know, and he's been doing it for so long. So in a lot of ways, I'm blessed to have him as a mentor.
Yeah.
But yeah, I play this song everywhere now. And it's, you know, what you write can be sang by somebody else, and it can echo in so many different ways. And actually, in the song Organized Crime, I have this line in it, for it's easier to trick somebody than it is to convince them that they've been tricked, which is a very old quote. But I heard it like repeated over and over again on Ricky's podcast. He does like a podcast called The Ripple Effect.
Yeah.
Ricky Varendez. Shout out, Ricky. That was kind of like, that was just like in there. And it was, in a way, I was kind of like trying to give him, that was like my little nugget of like, this is for you, because I hear it so often repeated by you in a way that I feel like, if you could write it in a song the way that I could, then you would. So like, I'm going to do that in a way.
So like you're his voice in a way at that moment, right?
It's like, yeah. And like, I mean, obviously like Mark Passio, I mean, when Mark Passio came to buy my CD, to buy the Red Pill Friends CDs, we had like all of our CDs out there. He had like My other bandmate Jude CDs were out there. Mike's CDs were out there. Hit the Mammal CDs were out there. I had my CDs and the Town Meeting CDs, and of course Mark, being the incredibly generous person he is, he's just like, I just want to buy every
Come
single
on.
one of them, you know. And I was like, I can't let you buy my solo CD because you fucking wrote it. Like, in a way, like listening to his hit a lot of, and I mean, it wasn't just him, but like he's definitely like one of the number one voices I was listening to at the time because of his approach. And and specifically, like, some people, that's not the approach for them at the time where they're at in, you know. But for me, that was
That's what I
exactly what I
needed.
needed. I
I
needed
call it
somebody
the
who did it for me
spiritual
straight. Yes.
bitch
Yes. Exactly. I love that. That's fucking
slap.
beautiful. I love that.
That's what
That's what I
most women
needed. And
are
that,
like.
so that was, that was what kind of wrote a lot of those songs in a way, you know.
Yeah.
And Mark's, obviously, his musical style is not my folky
He
stuff,
likes
but
it though.
it's kind of one hand giving to the other in a way,
Right.
like, you know, being able to kind of like hear that I've in that I've inspired him in any way, you know, is just this kind of like, that's exactly the way it's supposed to be, because, man, you've inspired me. So all I could have ever asked is to give back that inspiration towards
That
you know,
speaks
a
to,
little bit.
the tree of life. Normally I have my tree of life behind me on my poster, but I'm not in my studio today. There we go, my man. Appreciate it. Yeah, it's all tied together, right? That symbol really shows that, every part of the tree creates the tree, and the tree's not a tree without all those parts, the branches, the roots, but on the subject of your CDs, I realized after I told you, I was like, man, I don't even have a CD player, otherwise I'd probably get some. But I realized I do have a CD player in my ride, and it actually will record CDs so I can listen to them later. So now I do want to buy your CDs, and that's a good opportunity to ask, where do people go to buy your CDs? Can we get them mailed to
Well, this
us?
touches back on the logic part of things, because I have not figured out. Well, A, I have to physically get more CDs, so I have to order more CDs. The whole tooth surgery has kind of put things on a little bit of a hiatus. So I need to order more so I can physically have them. And then I need to, and I'm having somebody who's a little better at this than me figure out how to get them to be sold online. And then I just have to do my due diligence of getting the packing material and selling them. So right now you can't physically, I think if you go to bandcamp.com, you can buy it, which is the best way, as far as I know, to actually support the artist, because Spotify will just, you know, they just steal your money. But Bandcamp at least gives you a little bit more, and you can download it. And I believe there's an option to buy it physically. But I just be patient with me if you do, because I need to still order more and send them off, which is just one of those logical aspects of things that I'm left brain things that I'm trying to get a little better at.
Hey man, we all got our work to do. And I just was trying to jump that hoop myself with writing the book and then figuring out how to send it out to people. And there's been some struggles I didn't expect on that path. Like, it's really hard to send stuff overseas. It's way more expensive than I would have thought, which is hard to price it right. And it takes forever sometimes to get to different places. So, we got to learn these lessons. Like, I'm like you too. I tend to be a little bit more right brain. Like, yeah, I'll just send the books out. But, it's like, you got to learn how to have the little packages and have the books ready to send out when someone orders them, all that kind of thing. And so same with your process. But I see you got your BrendanDanielMusic.com. There must be some links there. Is that, can we find your social media and stuff there too?
BrendanDanielMusic.com should basically lead you in the direction of my YouTube, my Patreon, my Bandcamp, my tour dates, which I don't know if I have much coming up, but I'm working on that too, trying to book more, send more emails and whatnot. Hoping to maybe book something else out in Pennsylvania again.
How about
That would be
California?
cool. Sure.
We need you out
Let's
here.
make it
Well,
happen.
I got if you guys got iPhones, I managed to get on iMusic and get Live at Pork Fest 2023 and Good Intentions. And I've been playing those every day. So, if you guys
I didn't play Good Intentions at Sound
good
Path. I meant
track.
to.
And then I wanted to ask you about that one. Which track is it? I don't remember the name of it, where your guitar string breaks. You're like, oh shit, motherfucker.
That's needle on the outskirts.
That's a funny moment.
That was kind of my way of trying to get people to come over to Bandcamp, because if you go to Bandcamp, it's like, you know, that version is completed. I put a new string on it. Cool. But
you're
in a way, I maybe should have saved that nugget. Exactly. Good one.
That's me, bro, all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's badass. Well, so yeah, people check out. What do you do? Any social media stuff? You get on Instagram?
Yeah, I'm on Instagram, and unfortunately, I'm on Facebook. I can't stand Facebook, but I'm there because some people are there and they're not on Facebook and they're not on Instagram, and it's just like an easier platform to kind of like I already had a kind of a big following there from town meeting and stuff, so I stayed on Instagram, and then I got on Facebook for the people who aren't there, because it like shares it on both. So if I'm playing somewhere and I need, you know, to have people kind of, you know, oh, he's playing here or whatever. So yeah, if you go to Brendan Daniel and you add music and you just spell Brendan, B-R-E-N-D-A-N, and it's Daniel, not Daniels, you should be able to find.
Cool. I got to make sure I'm on your Facebook. I actually, I hated fake book for years. Like from the original talk about intuition, I always had the intuition that it was like a deep state CIA program. And then now you more and more, you see the confirmation that that's exactly the case.
100%.
But you know, like in 2020, when I decided to come out with my first presentations and my podcast, it occurred to me like, oh, you know, I bet you there's like a fake book group about Mark Passio and people that like Passio. And that's where I met Will Keller. That's where I met Leslie Bowers. And so, you know, I kind of have learned to really like fake book in a lot of ways now, because I feel like the main lamestream is trying to move people over to the more quicker moving ones like TikTok and shit. But Facebook, you can still have conversations with people on there. You can still have groups. And there are certain good things about it, like relating to people you haven't seen for years. When you're in some town, you're like, oh, what's his name's there? And then you hit them up on Facebook, and then they're real. So, you know, every evil mechanism, there's usually some backdoor channel for truth and love as well, if we look for it, you know?
Absolutely. There's always a, that's how it gets everybody initially, right? I mean, it's like, oh, we can all just kind of hang out for free and chill and meet each other.
So we can use that.
And that's why, you know, as long as it, you know, so yeah, there's a lot of good elements to that. You know, I see more often than not, and maybe it's just because of my algorithm or whatever, but in its early years, I saw a lot more of it used for that thing, you know, people kind of connecting and coming together on ideas, you know, like, oh, like fun stuff I found at antique shops or whatever. And then everybody's got to, you know, you're like, what's this thing? And you kind of have like this collective kind of like, you know, data feed, you know, like, oh, that's this, I'm a collector of those old wagons, you know, this, here's a picture of mine. And like, you know, that's the one you got there is a blah, 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 blah. Like, oh, cool. Like, you know, we can meet up or something. And, you know, I don't know, I'm kind of making weird comparisons, but like, you know, then you're at like an old timey wagon festival or, you know, any kind of like weird little nuance fringe kind of community you can find.
Right.
You know, so that
you can be creative and create your own group that no one ever created before.
Yes.
You know, like do it, folks. Don't be afraid of it. Just because it is a CIA control mechanism doesn't mean you can't use it to connect with people that you might not have connected with otherwise, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and then, so for me, the in-person events are everything, because, you know, I just like meeting someone and being within their sphere of, like, you know, physical consciousness. I feel like I get to know absolutely everything there is to know about that person just by being around them. So it's certainly what leads me to being on, like, this podcast.
Yeah, well, you might as well.
Like, I'm not as great at connecting with people on the internet, but once I meet them in real life, which is kind of what the internet, you know, should be like leading to the trickle effect of, we all get together and then we can stay in touch because of the beauty of the internet, you know, but it's all about getting together and being there.
I know you've told it a lot before, but for my audience, can you retell the story of Porkfest and how that all came about for you and how that changed things?
Yeah. So I was COVID came along, whatever that is or isn't. And town meeting at the time had a pretty big following. We were like making our way up, starting to open up for pretty big names, had quite a big following. And then the pandemic happened, and I was very vocal at that time about my thoughts on it. I had already had a gigantic mistrust in the pharmaceutical industry and was kind of, like I said, tuned into a little bit of what was going on in terms of what most people would consider to be conspiracy theory. I was not going to get the vaccine, and I knew it was going to get rolled out, and I knew that that was what this whole thing was about. So I was very vocal about it. And as many people were at that time, they decided to be incredibly divisive and decide that I was on the other side or the wrong side and tell me how much they were disappointed in me. And in a lot of cases, people told me that I was, a selfish piece of shit. I had my head up my own ass. A lot of people who I have very close and dear relationships with on a, on like a soul level. So it was this, an incredible betrayal from like a good portion of the people who had followed the band, which I guess I just wasn't aware that that many people weren't like privy to what I felt like my lyrics were touching on. So I thought I really need to find, so like obviously I'm not allowed to play anywhere. I had a meeting with my band. I said, "Look, are you guys cool with this?" They're like, "Yeah, we're cool with it. We're going to continue on." And I was like, "Okay, well, Godspeed, because I'm not." So as far as I knew, I was never going to be kind of allowed in like the main scene of like being able to play music again. But music is my life, so I need to find, and Rage Against the Machine is raging towards the machine, and everybody is like, everyone who you thought would kind of like have some fucking balls didn't, and it sucked. So I was like, if I go to this and listening to podcasts, all just constantly like everybody at that time, just trying to get as much of that like-minded spirit as I could at that time. But as someone who's not very good with like being on the internet and like engaging in that type of way, I just needed to find an in-person event. And I knew if I could just show my music, because I couldn't get, I didn't have the right video and the right recording stuff, and like I didn't feel like anybody was kind of like willing to help, obviously, because it was divisive. So I just knew I needed to go to an in-person event and show my music, because I had written music with the very, I had written all these new songs with that, with the notion of like, oh, well, people were confused about like how the spirit of what I was writing about before. Let me make it a much more to the point type of, I'm gonna write to a specific audience this time. So I wrote Hills We Die On, which the first line of that song is, "We didn't land on the moon in 1969. They lied about it." So I was like, okay, I'm a conspiracy theorist. I'm just gonna lean right into that, and start off songs like that, that kind of the like very liberty focused, where you can't really kind of dance around it. And I knew that somebody at this type of event would like it. So I pulled in, and I had no idea what I was doing. I didn't have a ticket. I, didn't know what the whole scene was, but I knew it was in New Hampshire. It was close enough to me, and I love the White Mountains anyways. I've hiked in and out of them my whole life, so I went there. And I just pulled in and found a little spot in the field, and I just set my intention. I think I like put some stones down in the field and a feather or something like that, and just kind of like tried to do some breath work. I was like huge into Wim Hof at the time, so I like just got into that space and was just like, this is where I'm supposed to be, and I'm just gonna go around to literally like every campsite and play my music until it strikes the right ear. And hopefully find a camp somewhere to camp, And right off the bat, I found a dude. He's incredibly nice. He let me stay at his spot. He introduces me to his neighbors, and his neighbors are these Southern guys. And these Southern guys are like, they're the guys who grew up with this guy, Howard. His pseudonym's Etienne de la Botte. He wrote this book, Government, The Biggest Scam in History Exposed. He's a very well-known voice in the Free State Project. I didn't know. He loved my music, and then me and him became fast friends, just hanging out, just chilling. And then the next day, just like, oh, and I went over to Richard's site because I knew Richard Grove was there, and I listened to his podcast, so I knew he was gonna be very busy. He's got his whole autonomy school, so I was just like, hey, is there anything I can do to help? And he's like, find me at the end of the festival. And I was like, okay. So I just, I let that be that. And then I went, and so the next day I'm helping Howard like move some easy ups or whatever to set up for his presentation. And there's a guy there who's got a pair of headphones and like a little field recorder mic. And I'm like, that's what I need to record all my new songs. Like, how's it going, man? Like, where'd you get that? Kind of trying to like talk shop about his gear or whatever. And he's like, oh yeah, like you got all these new songs? Like, what are you doing? And I was like, yeah, I got these new songs. I'm trying to record them. I need to get a recorder. He's like, well, look, what are you doing right now, dude? I'm like, nothing. So he's like, well, let's go record them. So we went over to the parking lot. And I don't know if any listeners have ever been to Porcupine Freedom Fest. The parking lot's just this giant, beautiful, grassy field that like looks out at the mountains. And he had his van there. And he opens up his van and he's got all these mic stands and these cables and he breaks out a cooler and I'm sitting on the cooler and he sets up like a whole full on professional setup, you know? And it was like, I was back in town meeting again. Like, you know, like I found the right guy. He didn't even know if I sucked or not, which is the most amazing part. Like I could have been horrible and he was willing to put in all this effort for me. And, apparently I didn't suck and neither did he. He showed me some of his songs. I was blown away. He had a podcast. He has a podcast called Terrain Theory. And he put my song out on his podcast. And it was like exactly what I had envisioned and like manifested because I was listening to this podcast. I got to get my music on these podcasts. I got to get into this space because these are my people. This is where I want to be, you know, like these are the folks I want to make music for. I want to make music for Richard Grove's audience. I want to make music for Mark Passio's audience. I want to make music for Sam Tripoli's audience. I want, you know, these people to listen to my music. And so Mike, he was in a band called The Mammals. Same situation, him and his wife, incredible songwriters. They started their band initially with Pete Seeger and they experienced more than anybody else that sense of the old guard kind of like not following through on actually standing up for what's right and speaking truth to power, you know, particularly during the whole COVID thing. People were just lost in the sauce. And it was just incredible. And I mean, yeah, long story short, we're bandmates now. And like, he's one of my best friends in the world and he's a mentor of mine. And I learn so much from him every day. He's like one of the most active, incredible, hardworking, brilliant people that I've ever met. And he orders my, he's considers himself my label. In the past two boxes of CDs that I've gotten to put out there, he is completely paid
wow.
for. And similarly with Howard, he had a whole box of books that he gave me. And he's like, I just want you to sell these and have them support your art. And at Soundpath, I had like very little CDs and most people don't listen to CDs, but the audience at Soundpath were all about the books and being able to kind of sell that and like help me with my gas money and all that stuff on the way home was incredible. So I like those two people I met right off the bat, have just art, like they've helped me in so many ways. And Richard was just like, I hung out for like 3 or 4 days after the festival was over because it was like rainy and shit. And just like hanging out with him and his wife and his kid and a few of his students and just chilling. And like, you know, obviously just playing music. We're like jamming to Alice in Chains and shit. And it was just
You're
cool.
The man
like,
out
it was
of
just
the
like,
box.
Yeah, these.
Yeah,
exactly.
Man, and exactly. Howard, he's such a cool. Etienne's done multiple funnel conferences. So he's been a big contributor to some of the stuff I've done too. And yeah, I've been through a lot of times with Richard and Autonomy and helped, you know, behind the scenes with some of his work. So I love all those guys too. I wish I could make it out to Porkfest, but I love that story because, you know, earlier I asked you about faith and I feel like that story is actually telling the essence of, you know, answering that question even better than we could have in other words.
Yes,
and
yeah.
A lot of times a
That's
story
a good
or
point.
A song, as we know, it's a multi-layered truth that tells all these stories in so many more ways than words alone. But we're getting close to the end. I know I needed to let you go for an hour. You got big things ahead of you. You got music to play tonight and a long trip ahead of you. But I want to just give you the floor to talk about whatever you want to close up, whatever message you want to send to people. I don't know if you want to talk about where people can donate to help you out because I want to share those links.
Oh, yeah, Mike. Yeah, my girlfriend set up a GoFundMe for me for my tooth surgery. We're already up over 4K, which is awesome. I think we set the goal for 6 so I could have extra money for like cosmetic stuff or like the after stuff, because like I gotta get like extractions, and then like like mainstream dentistry has kind of fucked me my whole life. And it's tough because when you sit down in that dentist chair and you get a feel, like by the time the dentist walks in, you've already gone through, like you've been there for over an hour with dental assistants, and they can be the sweetest people in the world and have great intentions. And then the dentist comes in and you're like, oh, this person's just trying to make a fucking buck off me. And it's too late. You've already signed the paperwork and all this
And
shit.
they
So
don't
it's been
always
like that my
explain
whole life.
well what
I'm
they're going to
flying.
do. I had the same experience.
Yes.
I'm like, oh, if I knew that that's what they were going to do, I would not have done that.
I already knew that my last root canal, like I already knew that like it was quackery, but I was in so much pain. And someone's there, like my girlfriend's there, she's experiencing this pain too. She can't deal with it. And then so like she's like gets my dad to like, and we can't afford to like fix it. So then someone comes along and they're like, look, I'm gonna pay, just do this thing. So now you're kind of at the whim of someone else's generosity. And I was like,
Right.
it's like it's better than being in pain,
Yeah.
but it's hard to kind of res you know reg you know looking back, I should have been a little more I guess resistant to the root canal, because I knew it was gonna be the wrong choice, which it was, because the tooth next to it killed, because they just drill it open and fill it full of bleach and it's all the chemicals.
Right.
And anyways, I finally found a dentist who gives a
Good,
shit,
good.
and she's incredible. She's a holistic
Fantastic.
dentist, she's bio like biology dentistry, like no chemicals, no metal, and she's very willing to help me out and is giving me a discount already on a lot of these things. So finally have like a light at the end of the tunnel, so to
Good.
speak, in terms of like a lot of this stuff, because I've been dealing with stuff my whole life because of dentistry and not having to be able to afford it, or and then just getting shit fucked up. I won't get the metal out of my mouth and all this crap, and like
All
yeah,
that to
it's
be said, help Brendan out, folks. I'm gonna put the link in the chat
yeah.
and I'll put it on the screen. Just kick in whatever you can. He's super appreciative if anything you could do. And we need to hear
And
that voice.
I could wrap up if you want by playing one song live
I
if you
would love
want.
that, man. I was just hoping you'd say that. I'm gonna put you on the
Yeah,
screen in a
all
second here. Thanks so much, folks, for hanging with us for the End Evil podcast. I'm going to let the podcast just end at the end of Brendan's track here. And I might put at the beginning, I'm going to double check with Conrad. He had this cool little recording he made on his
Oh,
phone.
cool.
And if I can share that, I'll probably put that at the beginning of the show. But yeah, let's
Yeah,
hear this
whatever works.
tune. And thanks so much, Brendan, for coming. I really appreciate having you here. And we got a lot of future ahead of us, so we'll have you back.
Oh yeah. No, thanks for having me, Chris. It was
All
really
right,
cool
much
meeting
love,
you.
brother. I'm gonna make you
And
big.
you've already heard this one. You've heard this one, I think, linked on my on the GoFundMe, because you commented on the YouTube video.
Oh, here we go. This is nope, that's not what I'm trying to do. Come on, restream, work with me here.
Sorry for the tune and was out of tune and played a show last night. Right, so I came up with this idea on the way back from the Sound Path Festival, and had it floating around in my head for about a week, and finally finished the lyrics. It's called One Foot in the Wishing Well. LIBERTY. Why history don't repeat, but it sure rhymes when you got one foot in the wishing well and one foot in this roller coaster ride. ENE, Why am I so foolish to not pick up on the signs as I go back and forth and in and out of time? Do I not recognize them? So if I D.I.E. tonight's all right, my dear, I know we're only given so much time down here when you got one foot in the wishing well and one foot in the spinning wheel. L-I-V-I-N-G, here and now. Well, the more things change, the more they stay the same somehow. When you got one foot in the wishing well and one foot's trying to burn it down. Yeah, here they come and here they go, and they're all insane. They're running towards the pleasure to escape this pain. Well, only you don't miss the sunshine till you're stuck out in the freezing rain. L-I-B-E-R-T. Why, history don't repeat, but it sure rhymes, when you got one foot in the wishing well and one foot in the paradigm.
Thanks, Chris.
This book and this moment are urging you to pause. The book that changed my life. Are you ready to start your new life? Are you ready to awaken to the purpose and the passion that's been waiting inside of you all along? Check out endevil.life. Evil is the destruction of freedom. I got the book, The End of All Evil. I got plenty of copies. So if you click on this link, either this book here or this link, it will take you to a payment page. You get the book and I send you some End Evil podcast stickers. My book is out. And so you can right now click on this link, order that copy that I'll sign for you. And I will also send you some stickers. Or you can get both. And this is a limited time deal that I've got on my website right now. You can order my book, the author's copy signed, and you can get The End of All Evil for $45 for both. And that link is right here on the End Evil store.
Thank you.
Can you keep rolling for say if there was a fourth verse? Go if you pick it back up. Can you go back to it? I got something.
Oh, okay, I got you.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Okay. Life is simple when I'm hanging with my people. What will it take? Just one move to end evil. Life is simple when you're living like this. All the time I was against myself, I didn't feel the bliss. And it's nothing like that when I'm here today in the back roads of the beautiful PA in the countryside where the sunset coming and I'm on my way, man. I'ma coming when it's Sunday around 7 o'clock Eastern time. I'ma tear down the roof, I can hear the fire coming with my people and I'm loving being like that. Life is simple, wish I knew you back in the day. When I was working all against myself, I was digging my own damn grave. Now I'm out, now I'm swimming, man. And now I'm flying now. Out here, it's the sound path, will never die. Never follow the crowd, never hit the crowd. Always going loud, always in the now, in the moment. Unscripted in the moment, and I'll never give up. Always gotta show them.
This is the End Evil Podcast, where we speak raw truth.